In the year 1991, U.S. Flight 1313 soared unknowing unto its death. As the vessel sank into the ocean's depths, three boys washed ashore on Skull Face Island. Near death, pursued by vicious creatures, the boys stumbled upon shelter. Who built it and for what purpose, none could say. But to their shock and amazement, a 55-inch TV glowed within, streaming every movie ever made.
I'd stick my neck out for nobody.
What the hell is it?
You're an inhuman monster!
I said good day!
After 20 years struggling for survival, they managed to repair the shelter's communication device. Perhaps someday they'll be rescued, but until then, they'll watch and discuss movies, hoping, praying you're listening.
Hello and welcome. This is Adam Frazier, aka Famous Monster, and you are listening to Skull Face Island, the official movie podcast of geeksofdoom.com. As always, I'm joined by Farrah Fawcett's mouth double, David Allen.
Hi. I don't know how to deal with that one.
And still recovering from a pachycephalosaurus attack, producer Tim Grant.
Hello.
Today on the show, we're going to talk about Jamie Travis's raunchy sex comedy For a Good Time Call, as well as Jake Shirer's Robot and Frank. But first, Tim, flip the thing on the thing.
Got it.
Got the news.
Got the news.
All right. First headline here. Rupert Wyatt might not be directing Rise of the Planet of the Apes sequel anymore. Before summer 2011 ended, I think everyone was really surprised, actually, by Rise of the Planet of the Apes. And I loved that movie. I thought it was great. And it seems like there might be some trouble here now as Wyatt is unable to commit to direct the sequel, which is tentatively titled Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And apparently it's not because he's having issues with the studio. It's because he feels that he is personally unable to deliver a film of the same quality, I guess, as the first film. Which, you know, I don't know. Is that a bit of a cop-out? I mean, Gary Ross just recently used this same kind of... not necessarily an excuse, but that was his reasons for backing out of the Hunger Games film sequel. So,
you know, I don't think it is a cop-out, because look at every sequel we wish didn't exist and wished that the director would have said the same thing. Like, not to say that these are going to, you know, sink these franchises or anything. They're definitely, like, Hunger Games sequel, Catching Fire is definitely going. And I'm guessing just with the success of Rise of the Planet of the Apes, they're going to definitely follow it up.
Yo, yeah.
But I think it's, I don't know. I mean, if it's legit, if it really is just a matter of they're saying, you know, I don't know if I can come up with a quality follow-up.
Right.
And that implies to me that if that's the real reason, then it means the studio is probably not willing to go for a different script. It means that, you know, they're not willing to sort of alter the direction of the franchise too much. Because normally that would be the assumption, is if there's a problem with the film, or what would become the film,
right,
then they would just sort of change it, alter it, do a rewrite, that kind of thing.
I guess my thing is, and you don't run into this too much, actually, but the thing about Rise of the Planet of the Apes was that I felt the stars of the movie were not even on camera. I mean, nobody went to see that film to see James Franco or John Lithgow.
Right.
They went to see amazing special effects and, of course, Andy Serkis bringing those characters to life. And the script was so good, and I thought the direction was so good, and now those people aren't involved. So,
Think you're kind of right. I mean, I don't have the same sort of regard for that movie that you do. I think that the first half is pretty, like, standard. And I thought the second half was much, much better.
What did Wyatt do before he did this? Does anyone know?
I'm not even sure.
See,
wasn't really this his kind of big debut?
It was.
It was a huge debut for him, yeah. It was definitely, it may have been his first feature-length film.
Yeah.
So do you not think that he's just looking out for himself here?
He could be.
Yeah, which I think is a totally fair position to take.
I mean, I think...
Especially since the Planet of the Apes franchise has a pretty shitty history.
This is true.
And, you know, you can maybe survive it if you're a Tim Burton, but... If this is really your break-in story, then you may not survive two or three of these films. Even if they are good, you know, you could get pigeonholed.
I just come from this point of view of, like, he created such a solid tone to the piece that I want to see that continued. It's the same thing, like, with Mark Webber in Spider-Man. You know, like, he's a great director, and does that mean that he should just stop doing this because he could be doing something else? Or should he commit to something like a Christopher Nolan, like a Peter Jackson, and create a body of work that is untouchable, that will be recognized as something of value? Because once you pass it off to someone else...
I mean, I understand what you're saying there, but not everyone has that freedom like Nolan does.
Oh, sure.
Like, you know, that was the deal with Nolan, was I'll make one of these...
I'll do what I goddamn well, you know, please. That's what Christopher Nolan said.
But in the
said.
Middle, I'm going to make my movie.
Right.
Like, you know, Batman Begins, Prestige, Dark Knight, Inception. Like, it's...
Yeah.
That's not an easy... Like, Mark Webb can't even do that. Like, that's the thing. They were having trouble with him, trying to figure out how to make that work.
Yeah.
What do we got next?
Up next is Larry David's improv comedy gets a title and adds Danny McBride and Bill Hader to the cast. Back, it was announced that Superbad's director, Greg Mottola, would be directing Larry David's improv comedy. And at that time, the only cast members that were known were John Hamm of Mad Men and Michael Keaton. And now we've learned that the film has a title, which is Clear History. And Hamm and Keaton will be joined by Bill Hader, Danny McBride, Philip Baker Hall, Amy Ryan, Kate Hudson, Eva Mendes... Pause for Tim's inevitable swoon.
Yes.
That's a swoon?
That was a celebration.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And JB Smoove.
This is awesome.
Yeah.
There, aside from Kate Hudson, there's not a thing in here that I don't love.
Right.
Like, every person in the cast is great.
Yes.
All, like, totally underrated character actors.
Yes.
Greg Mottola is an excellent comedy director. I think he's going to fit right in line with Larry David's style.
Yep.
I love that Larry David's moving into a movie. I love that he brought J.B. Smoove with him.
What is this movie about?
It looks like it's going to center on a marketing executive played by David who makes the terrible decision of getting into a petty argument with a boss. And then he quits his job at an electric car company.
Hold on. Stop right there. Is this a sequel to Who Killed the Electric Car? The classic documentary?
I don't know.
Continue.
Okay. And then basically it catches up with him 10 years later, and he sees that the company's worth billions. So he changes his name to basically try and get revenge on this company. So...
That's hilarious.
And it sounds like, just with the idea of it being an improv comedy, that it's going to very much fall in line with the Curb Your Enthusiasm style.
Absolutely.
Which has proven to be pretty much unstoppable so far, with every season arguably getting better as they come along. So,
great.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, we had one final piece of news here.
Yeah, yeah. This is something I've been wanting to tell people about a lot. And maybe if I'm lucky, I'll get to do this from time to time. But Criterion Collection, which is a collection of classic, foreign, and sort of underappreciated films that get the best treatment, you know, digital restoration, director's cuts, all sorts of behind-the-scenes featurettes, essays written by, you know, film historian, stuff like that. But yeah, so every month they release, they announce about four or five more releases. Most of the time it's four. And they're usually a couple months out. So they just recently announced the December releases.
Mm.
The first one is a film called Purple Noon by René Clément, who was a French director, really important in the beginning of film, like revolutionized a lot of sound films, stuff like that. Made a great movie called Le Million. which is really good if you should check it out. It's in Criterion. But this is an adaptation of Patricia Highsmith's Talented Mr. Ripley,
mm-hmm.
which predates the Matt Damon vehicle by yes. about, I think, 30 years.
Whoa.
Because the novel's pretty old.
Yeah.
But it's supposed to be really good. I've not seen it. It's a 70s or 60s kind of like, it's basically a very, from what I can understand, it's a 60s French film. So it's going to be really erotic, really weirdly creepy, and probably have an ambiguous ending.
Sounds right up my alley.
Yep.
Let me ask you something. Is Purple Noon a successor to Purple Haze? Do you think?
I think it predates it.
The Purple Haze of Dawn is then followed by a Purple Noon to create an overall green day. In a yellow submarine.
And then Purple Rain.
Purple Rain.
Yes. All of those things are true, yes.
Okay, good.
All right. Next one they're releasing is Blu-ray Brazil.
Terry Gilliam.
This is excellent.
Brazil.
His dystopian masterpiece. I don't like actually explaining a whole lot about this movie, because if you haven't seen it, I feel like it's really worth just kind of going into it blind. It's so bizarre and so weird. It's basically 1984 meets Monty Python absurdity.
Yeah, that's true.
So not quite as funny, but also not quite as dark as 84. But this is great. It's this was a really contested film between the producers and Gilliam when it came out. So there's three different versions because they brought in a separate editor.
That's what I was going to ask.
All three are included. Yeah. And I don't think there's any extra features from the previous Criterion release, but it's going to be on Blu-ray. And it's, I mean, clearly this is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, I can't imagine what that will look like on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I know.
It's a good restoration.
And then finally, the last two, one is called the Kotze Trilogy, directed by I think, Reggio. Koyaanisqatsi, Nakoyaatsi, they're really hard to pronounce.
Let me tell you something right now. If I can't spell it or pronounce it, I ain't watching.
Poyakatsi. And it's these three like, you could call them, like, tone poem films.
Yeah.
And there's no dialogue. It's just images. And really, really revolutionary movies. Really pushed the documentary genre. I don't even know if I'd really say it falls into that genre anymore,
yeah.
Just how documentaries have evolved. But just some of the most beautiful films ever created. And then the final one, which is pretty big, Christopher Nolan's Following, which is his first film.
Yes.
Shot in black and white on, I believe, 16mm.
Uh-huh.
Didn't have permits for a lot of the shots, so they were sort of doing this DIY.
And it took them, like, years.
Yeah, right? it took them a while.
They were just doing it over the weekends and stuff.
Yep. And basically just about a writer who is kind of looking for inspiration, so he starts following people, follows the wrong person down the wrong street, and gets into some Nolan-like twists and hijinks.
Yeah.
Very good.
It's exciting for me because it signifies that there might be more Criterion Nolan releases.
Yeah. They seem to be, there is this generation of filmmakers that I think have become sort of the top tier, you know, like class A, and recently. And I'd say that's Nolan, Fincher, Soderbergh. And Soderbergh's been in the collection for a while with Schizopolis.
Yeah.
As well as, I think, Grey's Anatomy and another one.
Fincher has two.
Fincher has two now. Curious Case and then just recently The Game.
But yeah, well, back in the Laserdisc days, he had seven.
Yeah, seven was in the Criterion.
Films, yeah.
Yeah. So I think that they are, they're trying to move in that direction. You've seen Danny Boyle get it added in recently with Shallow Grave.
Yeah.
So this has been pretty cool to see a lot of these filmmakers that our generation actually grew up with.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, all those are available in December, and you can check them out at criterion.com.
Sweet. So. Tim, is it, dare I say, is it movie time? For a Good Time Call is directed by Jamie Travis from an original screenplay by Katie Ann Nalen and Lauren Ann Miller. The film premiered at this year's Sundance Film Festival and is based on Miller and Nalen's real-life experiences as college roommates.
I get $1 a minute
for a phone sex line.
Whatever they say, I just tell them I want to lick it.
Okay, ew.
You know, you're not better than me. You're not better than phone sex.
I'm better than phone sex. Listen, the job we called you in for was filled this morning.
I want to make a third of the profits, and I'm not getting on the phone. It's strictly business.
Ooh, I like a little fire in you.
1-877. Mm-hmm. Yes, 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 yes. Rachel, it's
Shmokhayim
again.
Oh, billing, please.
Billing!
We've made $12,000 in 3 weeks.
I don't want to be boring anymore. I should be our second operator.
All right. Tell me what you're wearing, you dirty little slut.
Oh, it's a cute dress from Cindy Vincent.
Lauren. Hey. I thought we were going to take this seriously, right?
All right, so you've probably seen Lauren Ann Miller before, who's the one of the writers in the movie and also one of the leading actresses.
Mm-hmm. The brunette.
Yes, the brunette. She's actually starred in several films in a lot of supporting roles. She was in Superbad, Zach and Mary Make a Porno, Observe and Report, 50-50. Now, David, did you happen to notice a trend there?
I did. Oh, you wanted me to tell you. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, those are all films with Seth Rogen in them.
Yeah, that would be correct. And that's not a coincidence, actually, because Miller has been dating Seth Rogen since, like, 2004.
Mm-hmm.
They recently got married,
that's
which
sweet.
Is proof that even the most disgusting, awkward, yet hilarious guys can find true love.
Right, with terrible laughs.
Yes, his laugh is fantastic.
Yeah.
And then you've got Ari Grainer,
mm-hmm.
who you've also seen in tons of films. She was in Whip It, Date Night, Youth in Revolt, The Sitter, and Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, which is probably what she's most well known for. And she's always kind of been in the background of these movies, and I think For a Good Time Call is kind of her coming out party. It's like, hey, look, this girl is awesome. She's hilarious, and she's clearly leading lady material.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's also in theaters right now. You can also see her in Lee Tolan Krieger's indie drama Celeste and Jesse Forever. So she's been quite busy.
Yeah. The cool thing about this film, too, is that not only did Laura Ann Miller and her writing partner write the film, they were associate producers. And then Ari Grainer was an executive producer. So this is really their movie.
Yes.
Like, they made this from the ground up.
Yeah.
As far as I understand, they picked the director.
Yeah.
Jamie Travis.
Yeah, this was his feature film debut.
Right.
Previously to this, he had did some short films.
Mm-hmm.
He did great.
Yeah.
I thought. I thought the film had a very... It's almost like classic Apatow in the way that his best movies, you know, stuff like Knocked Up or The 40-Year-Old Virgin, they have this ability to be incredibly raunchy and mm-hmm. perverted and filled with just the most ridiculous things. And yet there's this undercurrent the whole time of like a very heartfelt, genuine relationship or friendship, you know, that's at the heart of the movie.
And also really, really simple premise.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it Knocked Up, obviously, a couple who didn't intend to gets pregnant.
Yep.
You know.
40-year-old virgin.
Is about a guy who's just trying to get laid.
It's actually the true story of Tim.
Yeah. And then, I mean, this is the same thing. It's these two girls who have a friend, a mutual friend in Justin Long.
Hilarious, Justin.
Who is excellent in this movie.
The gay best friend.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And they had a previous experience years before where, which is pretty funny and made them not like each other for at least 10 years, really resonated with them long enough where they hated each other for 10 years with no further contact. But both of them are in need of a roommate, and so they move in together. And that's the very basic beginning of it. And then the only thing after that is... to make money, they start a phone sex line.
Yeah.
And that's it. I mean, that's the movie.
It is.
Really.
And it's great.
And it is great. Yeah. Just across the board, great.
Tim actually saw this movie. We all sat down together.
Mm-hmm.
We made some chocolate chip cookies. We put on our jammers.
Yeah.
And we kicked back and watched this movie together. So we all have opinions, which is very rare.
Yeah, this is true.
So I would like to hear Tim talk a little bit about the movie.
Go for it, Tim.
I really love that, for whatever reason, women are like just taking over comedies, and it's so funny to me.
Yeah.
Yes.
Bridesmaids. I love Bridesmaids. Fantastic. I thought it was the best comedy in years and years. I don't think this quite lives up to Bridesmaids, but you can see how Bridesmaids opened this door. And it sounds like it was very similar in the way it was created. It was more or less a couple friends got together and started writing and came up with a movie.
Yeah.
I think that the spirit of that, you can really sense it while you're watching the movie. The content in this film is so raunchy. I mean, incredibly. Like, it could make people kind of, like, blush.
I was actually really surprised that some of it got in.
Yeah.
Like, especially being that this is a film that's, you know, predominantly starring women.
Yeah.
And that tends to get critiqued a little harder.
It does. Yeah, the MPAA. Film.
They don't like it.
No, they don't like to see women expressing their sexuality.
No. But maybe it's just because it's all vocal and it's so obviously comedic.
Yes, yeah.
They got away with it.
Well, yeah. And I think that there's an innocence to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is what was so charming for me, is that it wasn't just this raunchy comedy. And this, you can't pull this off with a comedy centered around males.
Absolutely.
Because there is
not,
no innocence left there. Everyone knows the story. They know what these guys are after. There was this simultaneous raunchiness with this innocence and this just need for a friend. And
right.
It all worked so well together.
Yeah.
And it really meshed for me. I really enjoyed it. I was laughing so hard at moments. I almost laughed myself out of my jammers.
Whoa!
Oh, man.
I'm
glad that didn't happen. Without going too into it, there's a scene where the two of them are on a phone sex call. And a customer has I think asked them to describe each other, and they start describing each other, and the camera is it's right in front of both of them. It's these great like headshots, and then it goes back and forth, and they keep saying these things about each other. And there's this the scene, everything about the scene is this sort of like artificial eroticism, you know, due to the nature of the call and all these different things. But they keep talking about these things that friends would appreciate about each other.
Right.
And saying, like, she's so beautiful, she's so caring, she's got these great eyes, all these different things. Not saying anything that your average caller to a sex line would want to hear.
Yeah, and he's fed up.
And it's perfect. It's this beautiful betrayal of the facade of the sex line, you know.
Yeah.
And even the movie itself, which, you know, normally sells women to us in this certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And just undercuts it and says, like, that is not, I mean, this is a chick flick, you know. Clearly, as far as that definition goes, this film falls right in line with it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And that's what's so great about it, because it managed to be that and still be just as raunchy, if not raunchier, than just about every comedy that's come out in the last.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You know,
and the other thing
years.
It does to that point is that it really tells you what sex means to women.
Oh man, totally.
You know, that.
Yeah.
That and I can't go too far into that.
That's
because
a great
that's,
point.
That's going to give away quite a lot, but.
Yeah,
that sex to men is this $2.99 a minute. Maybe it takes 2 minutes. Maybe it takes 10 minutes. Whatever.
Yeah,
but sex to women is so different. Yeah, 15 seconds.
40 minutes if you're in the bathroom.
Depends on the color sock that's on the handle. All right. All right.
Well, to those points, I was going to say I hate to use the word chick flick because. I don't know. Up until some of these movies like Bridesmaids and mm-hmm. stuff, I think a lot of movies that people would consider quote-unquote chick flicks are just movies that I think are fucking terrible. And I hate for it to sound
that
way.
That's kind of what I'm trying to say, though, is that these are movies that I think are breaking that genre.
Exactly.
And they're saying that it's in the same way, I think that chick flicks are becoming what the new bromance genre is.
Yes.
Which is equivalence, that it doesn't denote quality, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I think that it means that it can be any kind of comedy. It doesn't matter. It's just saying at the heart of it is a relationship between two women in the same way that the heart of a bromance film is a relationship between two men.
Yeah. Well, so. And what I wanted to say with that is ever since I was a little kid, I've been watching these kinds of movies, but I've never really been quantifying them as that. Like,
yeah,
I loved Clueless when it came out.
Yeah.
And I never really considered that to be a chick flick because I just thought it was so kind of honest in a way and genuine, you know, of what it was trying to tell. And then, you know, Mean Girls and movies like that, you know, they all deal with this, I don't want to say girl power because that's Spice Girls reference and I would never make that. But,
okay, so.
But this movie, again, there's a current of empowerment that these are two women that are complete control of their sexuality and they're confident and they're not afraid to use it.
Right.
And that's, to me, that's pretty refreshing.
And at the same time, very different.
Yes, absolutely different.
What did we think about the performances? Just supporting, because it's a small cast.
It is.
But, what was your impression of everybody?
Ari Grainer was fantastic. Like I said, this is her coming out.
She reminded me of Goldie Hawn.
Yeah, with a touch of Bette Midler.
Right? Oh, that's perfect. Mm. You nailed it. Yeah, like at both of their peaks.
Yeah. And Lauren, you know, like we mentioned, she's been in a lot of stuff, but always in the background.
Yeah.
And she was great, too.
She kind of reminded me of, I don't know what it was. Maybe it was part of it was appearance, but it almost reminded me of, like, if Zooey Deschanel's recent characters, who are all essentially the same person.
Grew the fuck up
and were, like, and if the actor treated them with respect.
Right.
Like, because that's what there was points of it in the movie where I thought this was kind of hipsterish.
Mm-hmm.
But then as you watch it, you realize it really moves beyond that. I think it just happens to be just because of when it was made.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be one of those things where we just...
Yeah, I think it's just like a reflection of what people our age are living their lives like in New York. You know? And that speaks to the Justin Long character. He was also great. The gay best friend who's always handing out pamphlets to his comedy show.
So good. And almost overwhelms the movie, and then they pull him back in the second act. And then his appearances are rare, but so perfect and so funny.
All right, well, let's talk ratings, final ratings.
Yeah, let's give this movie some ratings. I would say 3 really, really satisfying climaxes.
Oh, my.
Mm. Yeah. Noises.
Oh, I got it. Oh, okay.
Noises.
I think I know what one of those sounds like.
Probably heard the echoes, the island.
That's right. Does it sound like a volcano erupting? Because we have a lot of those.
It feels like it.
Oh.
Oh.
Socks on the doorknob. Tim, you're next.
Well, I'm going to give it 5.
A creepy laugh.
Creepy knowing laugh.
Well, I was going to give it some bananas, and then I realized how appropriate that was.
So you abandoned the idea because it was appropriate?
I'm going to give it one big banana.
Okay.
All right.
And a couple of plums.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. So my rating, 3 cheetah print thongs and 2 $100 phone cards. Because I need the minutes.
All right, well, we're going to go ahead and go to another film that 2 of us saw, not including myself.
Yeah.
This one is called Robot and Frank. It is set in the near future. Frank, an ex-jewel thief, played by Frank Langella, receives a gift from his son, Hunter, played by James Marsden, a robotic butler programmed to look after him.
Can I help you find anything?
Where is the librarian?
Hey, Frank.
Hey there.
What'll it be? The usual?
I'd be more interested in getting your phone number.
Call from Madison Weld.
Maddie, my girl.
Hi. Has Hunter been coming around?
Dad, you're right in the middle of the road.
Look at this place. This is gross.
You have a problem. I brought you something.
Hi, Frank.
You have got to be kidding me.
You know, it's funny. I didn't know much about Jack Shearer, the director of this. Mm-hmm. And so I was doing a little research. And luckily, it seems like no one else really knows much about him either. His IMDb page is pretty bare. But apparently, he was the ex-keyboardist for Francis and the Lights, which is this pop synth indie band, I guess. They've toured with people like Drake and Kesha and MGMT. But his only previous film to this was a 2005 short film called Christopher Ford Sees a Movie. And that movie was actually about or starred Christopher D. Ford, who is the writer of this movie.
Oh, wow.
So both of these guys are relatively unknown newcomers, and they just knocked it out of the park. Like, while I was watching this movie, I was thinking, well, who made this movie? Because this looks like a tenured, mature, kind of restrained, in a way, work. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Whereas usually this kind of movie could take on that indie quirkiness that can sometimes go way off the charts.
Right.
It could have easily have been Little Miss Sunshine with a robot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah. It was definitely toned back in a very heartfelt and poignant even movie. Basically what it's about is Frank Langella plays this man who has Alzheimer's or some form of dementia, and it's progressively getting worse. So his son buys him this caretaker robot to help look after him, you know, make meals, and also engage his cognitive functions and, you know, yeah, set daily routines and have him, you know, plant a garden and all this stuff. And Langella is your typical grumpy old man, very, you know, Clint Eastwood, Gran Torino, kind of get off my lawn kind of thing.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
At first, the robot is definitely cramping his style and he wants it out of the house. But then he comes to realize that the robot, while it has all these dictionary definitions of stealing and stuff, it doesn't really have a way of deciding if those actions are right or wrong. So when Frank goes to, by nature, he's a kleptomaniac, and he goes into a store and goes to steal something, he ends up kind of sort of getting caught, so he puts it back. Well, while he's talking to the store clerk, the robot actually steals it for him. And so they get back to the house, and he's like, why did you do that? Why did you do that? And the robot's like, well, because you wanted it. You were going to take it, but then you got caught, so I got it for you. And it's at that moment that he realizes,
oh, shit,
I can train this robot to essentially kickstart my old career of being a cat burglar again. Because as he's hanging out with the robot, his mind is becoming sharper, and he's able to essentially pick up where he left off with doing these burglaries. And, you know, there's all these great scenes of him teaching the robot how to pick locks and how to case buildings and everything. Tim?
So I have this strange affinity towards movies with elderly main characters.
Cocoon.
I can't imagine why, Tim.
I don't know. I'm charmed by it. I don't know what is going on. It may also be that there is just this maybe it's feeling their mortality brings me a little bit closer to them. Maybe it's just the charm and the wit of old people on screen that, you know, pulls it out of me. I don't know. Another Year, Waking Dead Divine, some of my favorite movies.
Anything with Judy Dench.
I wouldn't go that far. I do love Judy Dench, unlike you, Adam, I realize.
Let's get a one bedroom at the exotic Marigold Hotel.
We're going to save this for another day.
And let me slap you around like a $2 hooker.
This is a fight you're going to lose. I'm on Tim's side with this.
I've got God on my side.
So Langella, who I'm actually not a huge fan of him, but he just nails this character.
This might be his best performance, honestly.
Yeah. It is incredible.
I mean, he's done great stuff. Frost Nixon was great. Mm-hmm. He actually did a really good turn as Dracula.
Yeah, he did.
There in the 80s.
He did.
And, I mean, who can forget Skeletor? He played Skeletor in the Masters of the Universe. He did play Skeletor. So, I mean, it's hard to top that.
What he does here is he gives you two sides. He gives you the kind of the old bastard side, mm-hmm. and you laugh at that, but then it's strong enough and sharp enough so where you're a little bit intimidated by it. And then he gives you this tender old man side, which you just fall in love with.
Yes.
And you fall in love with it enough to kind of forgive the old bastard side.
Yeah.
And that actually becomes really important, because this movie, where it could have fallen into this, old man and the buddy robot, you know, and they're going skipping down the highway and it's a great old day. It could have been that. What it becomes is an incredibly smart critique of the near future and man's relationship with technology.
Yes. Yeah, so yeah. Our dependency.
I was going to say, does it give a specific date or is it just kind of vague?
It just says near future, yeah.
Okay.
I would say 30 years from now, maybe.
That's smart.
So that's the other interesting thing, too, is because you do have these elderly characters like Langella, and Susan Sarandon is also in the movie.
Right.
And they're using words like cool and, you know, they're cussing and they're talking very much the way we do. So it could be that near future, like our generation as old people. And the robot, we should really mention, is voiced by Peter Sarsgaard, who
awesome.
Thought he was done after Green Lantern, thought that killed him off, thought he went into hiding.
So, overall impressions, ratings?
I'm going to rate it 3 antique copies of Don Quixote.
Awesome.
And 5 Johnny Fives.
Oh, whoa.
Man.
Whoa.
5 Johnny Fives.
And 1.
Do you know how many books they could read in 10 seconds?
And 1. Beep, beep, boop.
Whoa.
That's an R2-D2 noise.
Awesome.
Because it's robots.
Yeah. Tim, ratings.
I'm going to give it 2 of Honda's best scientists.
I don't know if they're going to appreciate that.
And
she's giving them away like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. We could be close to there. I don't know. an old man single blade razor.
Oh, I like that. Sorry, Adam. I like it better than yours.
That's understandable.
It's okay.
I made R2-D2 noises.
You did make R2-D2 noises.
I like this movie a lot. I think it's great.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It'll definitely be in my top 5, I think.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
I think so.
I'm definitely going to have to check it out now.
Sweet. Guys, before we move on, let's take a time out here to recognize the folks that... I just can't stress this enough, how much Geeks of Doom does for us. They keep the generators running. They make regular food drops. They keep the natives at bay. They shipped us a crate of pumpkin spice candles.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did.
It smells delicious in here. Am I the only one? Speak the fuck up or forever hold your peace. It smells like Starbucks in here.
You seem to be having a moment in describing those. I was waiting for some sort of poetic outburst.
I'll tell you, and you know, we'll talk about Geeks of Doom more here in a second, but I love autumn. I love the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And it pisses me off on this godforsaken island that we don't get any leaves changing.
No.
I can't find a pumpkin to save my fucking soul.
Yeah.
I carved a gourd jack-o'-lantern. It was not that impressive.
Yeah.
But these little touches, like the pumpkin spice candles from Geeks of Doom, they really make me feel good. And, of course, geeksofdoom.com has all the best geek-related scoops on comics, movies, television, pop culture paraphernalia. And they're just some goddamn nice people. And you should support nice people. What?
Speaking of rescuing us.
Oh, speaking of rescuing us, today's third segment, it's going to be a little game, a little bit of daydream fantasy, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Tim, what are we going to be doing here?
We're going to be sharing with each other our best day ever, the day we are rescued.
An idyllic final day, I guess, either on the island or your first day back on the mainland.
Right.
However you want to imagine it, and it's going to end with that movie that will just make that day just crystallized in your memory as the best day you've ever had.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tell it to me. Share it with me.
I think I'll probably go first.
I like that.
Okay. Now, being that this is a fantasy, I can't honestly say that this is necessarily how I would follow through on things. But when I think about how I've been stuck on this fucking island this long, these are some of the feelings that I have.
Okay.
So we get rescued.
Uh-huh.
I don't care how.
Okay.
We get rescued. A boat takes us back to America.
America. Okay.
And that day, what I want to do is a couple things.
Mm-hmm.
I want a slice of pepperoni pizza.
Mm.
I want a beer.
Delicious.
I don't care what kind it is. Sure. I just want a beer.
Miller High Life.
Sure. Whatever. Champagne and beers.
Yep.
And then I mean, without getting too vulgar here, I want to have the sex because I've been stuck on this island staring at the two of you. I can tell you right now, it's not doing anything for me.
Sure, sure.
And then I'm going to find Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
And I'm going to kill him.
Uh-huh, sure.
I'm going to take his head off of his body.
Whoa.
And I'm going to put a bloody handprint on his face.
Skullface Island does not endorse the opinions of David Allen.
I'm going to sit on a couch. I'm going to watch Castaway because it used to make me so angry when it came out.
Wow.
Because he got away and we didn't.
You're right. And he worked for FedEx, and those motherfuckers have good benefits.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
this might be a personal question, and I don't want to cross any boundaries.
You do what you ask whatever you want.
When you're having the sex, what song is playing in the background when that happens?
Probably The Clash's Rock the Casbah.
What?
It's got a good rhythm. It's a good
why
rhythm
did you
to
have
it.
To ask that question?
I was thinking more like...
Now we are going to listen to that song.
No, I'll
and
never
we're
going to
see David having the sex.
Yeah.
I was thinking more like Blackstreet, No Diggity, No Doubt. Mm-hmm.
I think that you're projecting there.
Oh, sorry.
I think that's the song you want to play.
Well, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a great, great day.
Yeah. And this is all assuming, by the way, that I never get caught for any of these things. The murdering of Tom Hanks.
Oh, right. There is that small detail of committing homicide.
Yeah. You know, and it's a shame because I really like him. But, you know, I remember when I watched that movie, I was sitting on the couch and I would just look out the window and I remember thinking, you know, I don't think people in the rest of the world understand how insulting this film is to us. And that's not their fault.
Hey, after Cloud Atlas, he might want you to kill him.
Tim, Adam, who's next?
I think Tim is next.
I'll go.
Go for it, Tim.
I like to eat food. And I'm tired of your cooking, David.
Finally, fair. Someone says it. Why it's do you
terrible.
Think I've been getting
fair enough.
Martin burritos?
Yeah.
And tacos,
actually,
dog.
Yeah, I should get in on that.
Continue on your day.
Yeah, yeah, I would like
we digress.
To.
I am rescued. I'm rescued. And I go back to New York. We end up in New York, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that I do is I go to an Italian restaurant.
Oh.
And I have a feast. A feast... like almost no other feast, except for in the movie Big Night.
Oh.
Which I watch immediately after feasting.
I think that Tim's day is pretty excellent.
It sounds fantastic.
I too am a big Big Night fan. And your day just made me happy, even though you implied that you left us behind.
Yeah, I feel a little bad now. But not enough to tell you that you've got to improve this cooking, David.
All right, I'll see what I can do. I'll see what I can do. Right.
Well, my perfect day, you know, I know you guys, you're really excited to get off the island and you know, go on to living a normal life. But
yeah,
I'll be honest with you. We just have it too fucking good here. I mean, there's the occasional millipede situation or that giant ape that arbitrarily shows up and just fucks shit up. But other than that, man, we have a fucking TV that never turns off. It just plays everything. We have a robotic butler. We have a direct line to Satan.
Yeah.
I'm not going anywhere. So that here's my perfect day. My perfect day is a freighter comes to the island. It picks you two ungrateful assholes up and takes you away. And then I get to enjoy the spoils of the island. And here's the breakdown. 10 a.m., wake up. Martin makes me a fantastic breakfast. I'm talking Virginia country ham, salted.
Yeah.
Scrambled eggs. Mm. Brontosaurus bacon.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe some sausage links if we can get it.
It's hard.
Yeah. And, oh, well, the eggs, of course, are pterodactyl eggs.
Yeah.
I just thought that went without saying.
Hey, of course. I mean, that's been my diet the last 2 years.
Yeah. So I eat a big breakfast. Me and Martin go out into the jungle for a nice little stroll, take in the fresh air.
Yeah.
Stop by the natives' camp, see what's up. Turns out they're having a wild boar picnic party roast. All three.
Nice.
Party picnic roast.
Nice.
We're getting drunk because they're making this crazy fire water that I don't even want to know how they made it, but I think it involves leftover jet fuel from the plane crash.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's getting serious.
That doesn't exist. We need to work on that.
Then I literally devote 4 hours of the day to just fucking swinging on a tire swing in the middle of the jungle. Sure, it's a little risky because it's right near a sand pit, and it's also near a fucking, like, prehistoric badger's den. I come home, and then it's time to watch a movie. What do I want to watch? The first day of the rest of my life on this island alone.
What do you watch?
Sandlot.
Oh, that's no, so sweet.
That's not sweet.
It's so sweet.
It's not sweet because he's talking about a movie that talks about friends, and he just let us fucking leave. If we really mattered to him, this is a self-induced sadness you're creating.
But listen, David, listen to what you're saying. In his fantasy, we get off the island. This is a sweet story.
You're going about this all wrong.
He's a sweet kid.
You're going about this story all wrong. You're going about it under the pretense that I consider you friends.
There's a shared experience in this.
You're right.
We all watched a movie.
Yes.
Mine was after murder. Tim's was after gluttony. And yours was after, I don't know, what? Sloth? It sounded like a pretty lazy day.
Tire swings. Yeah.
So.
Or immaturity. I know that's not a sin. But
is that the eighth cardinal sin?
I think the Rolling Stones said it best when they said, you know, sometimes you don't always get what you want. But if you try, sometimes you just might find you get what you need.
Maybe this island is what we need.
That's what I've been saying since the start.
But I don't want you to assume that means you're right.
Well, yeah, of course.
Because we all have to be wrong in some way here for this to work.
All right.
Yeah, we got to learn something about ourselves, Adam.
Oh, I see.
We all love movies.
You don't understand, do you?
No. I was just going to wake up and do the exact same thing tomorrow.
Right. Well, that concludes another episode of Skullface Island.
El Diablo!
As always, you can call the Skullface Island hotline.
Sorry.
What was that?
It was a panic attack. I saw a giant dragonfly at the window again.
Oh, man. It's like that secret scene that was in 3 Men and a Baby that was never actually there. the hotline for Skullface Island is 980-272-0111. You can call us there and leave us disparaging messages, or you can, you know, encourage us.
Coordinates.
You can tell us funny jokes, all sorts of stuff. You can email us at skullfaceisland@gmail.com. You can do the same thing there with all the comments, disparaging jokes.
You can send us pictures of things.
And don't forget to tweet us using the Skullface Island hashtag. We do check that pretty regularly. And then also like our Facebook page.
All right, well, man, I'm pretty sleepy. I think I'm gonna go curl up on the couch and fall asleep to, I don't know, Steel Magnolias, maybe.
I have an idea.
Yeah?
Why don't we watch The Sandlot?
Oh, you guys.
Yeah.
I love you guys.
I won't go that far, but I'll watch The Sandlot with you.
Yeah.
Martin, bring us some burritos.